You said yes to President Donald Trump in 2016. And I know in 7 short days, North Carolina is going to say yes again to President Donald Trump in 2020.
And the bottom line is, I do believe the outcome of this race will, in very many ways, be decided by you, North Carolina. It will be.
Well, the campaigns agree at least on that much. The path to election victory narrows and runs right through the Tar Heel State. From NPR and WBUR, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and for the past 2.5 months, 10 straight weeks, we've been hosting voter roundtables, hearing from people across the country. And today on Point, it's our last voter roundtable before the end of voting next week, so we are talking with North Carolinians. I'm joined by 3 of them today. Von Gretchen Pugh joins us. She's a regional study coordinator in Raleigh, North Carolina. Von Gretchen, welcome to On Point.
Hello, Meghna. Hello, everyone.
It's great to have you. And also with us from New Bern, North Carolina, is Bill Poole. He works in sales for a local radio group. Bill, welcome to you.
Well, thanks. I'm glad to be here and excited to have a nice conversation.
It's great to have you, Bill. And Brandon Beavers is also with us from Robbinsville, North Carolina. He's a delivery driver and a graduate student at Western Carolina University. Brandon, welcome to you.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So I was wondering if we could start by just hearing a little bit from the 3 of you kind of about the communities that you live in, because North Carolina is really interesting, diverse, kind of changing place. So, Von Gretchen, you want to tell us a little bit about Durham and where you live and what it's been like?
Sure. So I actually live primarily, I live in Raleigh, but okay. Durham is not too far away. We call that like our research triangle area, yep. The Raleigh-Durham area. I know in particular in Raleigh, of course, just as you said, we have a very diverse population, and it's just a mixture of things going on politically, from our local races to, of course, the presidency and vice presidency. So it's a mixture of the two as far as where people kind of are leaning. Mm-hmm. Ironically, in my neighborhood, like just thinking about my street, and I live on a pretty diverse street, ethnicities, genders, et cetera, people with children, no children, age groups. But there's not one sign giving any kind of support or affiliation one way or the other, which is very interesting, but also, I guess, to a degree, maybe refreshing since there are probably a million of them elsewhere. maybe people feel that, you know, once they come home, they at least have an opportunity to kind of step away from it.
Yeah. Yeah. We all need a break for sure. Bill, so New Bern, I'll be honest, I'm not familiar with New Bern. So where is it in the state and what's New Bern like?
Well, I'm about 2 hours east of Gretchen. And about an hour from the coast. Mm-hmm. New Bern is it's a somewhat diverse town for eastern North Carolina. East of I-95, you know, it's a lot more rural than a good part of the state. You know, we're sort of influenced here by farming, military, tourism. It's a good retirement area, especially New Bern and the coast. And it's probably one of the more conservative parts of the state. Our congressional district, the 3rd district, has been called one of, if not the most conservative district in the state. And I think, while we have diverse views in politics and so on, I certainly think that's you know, that's probably relevant for this discussion that this is such a conservative area.
Yeah, and have you lived in the New Bern area most of your life? Because you're a native North Carolinian, right?
I am a native North Carolinian. I was born in the Piedmont area, okay. High Point. I lived in the foothills near Shelby, And I went to school at UNC Chapel Hill, and I didn't know anything east of I-95 until about 1980. Mm-hmm. But you couldn't drag me out of here now.
And Brandon, Robbinsville, North Carolina, same thing. Where is it? And tell me a little bit about the community.
Well, it's my understanding you guys had a hard time finding it on a map, but...
Well, I could have cheated and used Google, but I don't want to cheat. I wanted to hear from the source himself.
Even then, that's a stretch. But essentially, you know, Graham County is situated in the center of a lot of national forest. You know, we're Chioa District National Forest. We have Joyce Kilmer Wilderness, Slick Rock Wilderness, Santita Lake, Fontana Dam, which I'm sure you might be familiar with the history of the TVA, Tennessee Valley mm-hmm. Authority, International Driving Road, Racing Road, Tail of the Dragon, some of the best fly fishing waters in the eastern part of the United States. So I'm happy to call it home. It's a giant playground.
Yeah. You know, one of the things, of the many things I've really loved about these weekly voter roundtables we're doing is when people describe their communities, it just makes me fall in love again with how spectacularly gorgeous this country is in all pockets, everywhere people live.
I agree.
But so Von Gretchen and Bill, for the two of you in particular, because I should say all three of you are native North Carolinians, right?
Correct. Yeah. I'm a native North Carolinian.
And Brandon, you too, right?
Yeah. I graduated from Robbinsville High School.
Okay. So the reason why I wanted to point that out, and Von Gretchen, I'll start with you, is that the state has been changing a lot over the past, I don't know, decade or so, maybe even more than that. And I was just wondering if you wanted to talk a little bit about how you see North Carolina changing over the course of your lifetime.
And you're right, it has tremendously. I'm probably considered a unicorn. I was actually born in Raleigh, North Carolina. Very few people are actually from here and actually still live here, so to speak, enough. But the dynamic has certainly changed. Having the RTP area where we have a lot of science, a lot of clinical research, some of the best universities in the area, we've had people to kind of come from some of everywhere. So that has definitely been amazing. Also, from a growth standpoint, that has been frustrating at times. And exciting at times because we've probably grown a lot faster than anticipated. Mm-hmm. The dynamic of maybe some coming from various places, maybe up north or wherever, coming here and then maybe being involved in education, like being on the board or in different political arenas, bringing a different dynamic in that way has been different as well. Certainly challenging at times, but sometimes for the better as well.
Yeah. And Bill, how have you seen North Carolina change over your lifetime?
Well, I'll talk a little bit more about this part of the state.
Yeah.
Certainly, I echo a lot of the things that Von Gretchen said. The state has changed tremendously over time. But here, I came in 1980, and I can remember driving on Highway 58, the beach road, and you could go for good distances without seeing development on either side. Mm-hmm. And now we call that stretch the Crystal Coast. It goes from Atlantic Beach to Emerald Isle. And you can't drive 100 yards now, maybe less than that, mm-hmm. with structures on both sides. Just tremendous growth in this part of the state. People have come here from everywhere. New Bern and the Crystal Coast are great retirement areas, but we also have military bases in the immediate area. Cherry Point Air Station in Craven County and Camp Lejeune in Jacksonville. So many people from all over the country are stationed here at one time or another, and a surprising number of people, when they finish their military service, decide to live here. Mm-hmm. So tremendous growth and a good bit of diversity has come from those elements.
Yeah. And so, Brandon, I'll ask the same of you, because we've just got a couple of minutes left before we have to take our first break. How have you seen your state change?
So Western North Carolina, particularly Graham County, you know, obviously it's most familiar to me. We have an influx of a kind of a melting pot of retirees, but the county culture itself is very conservative and essentially is composed of a lot of families that have kind of been in this area of Western North Carolina for a long period of time. But I'm working in Haywood County and kind of further east from where I live, and I just see a lot of growth in Western North Carolina as a whole, kind of Asheville West. Mm-hmm. It's really, each county is so unique, and they offer a lot of interesting things and resources. So I see a lot of hope as far as Western North Carolina, that kind of region, Asheville West, a lot of good things ahead from my view.
Well, Von Gretchen, we've just got about 30 seconds to go before we have to take a quick break. And I'm wondering if, you know, in the descriptions that we're hearing about how North Carolina's changed, politicos call the state the swingiest of swing states, right? In terms of it's pretty heterodox when it comes to its national level politics. Are you seeing that where you are?
I agree. Just as you said, like just the dynamics on either side, the number of electoral votes that we have coming into play, and then all of our Senate seats being up for grabs. I think, yeah, I would say I agree with you wholeheartedly.
And the nation is watching how folks like you three are going to decide. So when we come back, we'll talk about what you want in leadership in Washington. We are having our final voter roundtable before the end of voting next week, and we are talking to three native North Carolinians. We'll be back with a lot more. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is our last voter roundtable that we are holding before the end of voting next week, and we are talking with North Carolinians today because their state, North Carolina, is considered one of the most critical must-win states in the road to the White House. I'm joined today by Von Gretchen Pugh. She's with us from Raleigh, North Carolina. Bill Poole joins us from New Bern, North Carolina, and Brandon Beavers is with us from Robbinsville, North Carolina. We talked to a lot of North Carolinians in the process of preparing for today's roundtable. For example, here is Linda Smart. She's from Oxford, North Carolina. She voted for President Trump in 2016. She's going to cast her ballot for him again.
I want to really have somebody in there who's really good with foreign affairs. And I think President Trump has done a lot to ease a lot of the tensions around the world, to make it work better for us with the trade and different relationships. I think we get a little respect that we didn't have under Obama.
That's Linda Smart from Oxford, North Carolina. As I mentioned a little earlier, all of our guests today, our live roundtable guests, are native North Carolinians. But the state has attracted a lot of outsiders who move to North Carolina and call it home. One of them is Derek Partee. He grew up in Hempstead Village on Long Island, New York.
A community of Black middle-class Republicans. So my orientation with the Republican Party goes way back, 49 years.
And Derek worked as a homicide detective in Nassau County, but in 2012, he moved to Huntersville, North Carolina, near Charlotte. In 2016, he voted for Donald Trump.
He is a New York Republican. I felt that he would bring his business sense to the presidency. But also, I just felt that, you know, we just needed a change to get him in there.
So Derek hoped that Donald Trump, President Trump, would leave those parts of himself back in New York.
An entertainer, a celebrity, a brand, the Trump name, a brand. I felt that he would not bring all that to the Oval Office. And it seems like he cannot let that go. And he did bring that to the Oval Office. And I think it's time to replace him. You have to be aware that there are people that are for your interests and there are people that are just there for their own interests.
That's Derek Partee. He is originally from Long Island, New York, now lives in Huntersville, North Carolina. So, Von Gretchen, Bill, and Brandon, I'm eager to hear what you're looking for in a leader for this country over the next 4 years, and who do you think is best suited to fit that bill? And Von Gretchen, let me start with you.
Sure. I would say for the upcoming president, having someone that takes ownership, regardless of the outcome, I feel in our current presidency, that only happens when, quote unquote, something good takes place. And I think as a nation, no matter what side of the aisle you're on, we need that. We need to know that if it didn't go right, we're going to work together to make it better versus, oh, I didn't do that or that wasn't on my watch. We certainly need someone with more of a we attitude and not just an I, and someone that knows how to exercise compassion, but can be cutthroat if needed for, you know, a lack of a better term. I think the business side of President Trump had or could have had its pluses, if you would, if utilized in the correct way. There are some good things about it, but certainly not so good, in my opinion.
So does that mean that do you know for sure if you're going to vote for the former Vice President Biden?
I've already voted. And Okay. Yes, I did cast my vote for the Biden-Harris ticket.
Okay.
Certainly, even and I wasn't a given, so to speak, in 2016, I did not want to vote for Hillary, but I felt like the dynamic of President Trump may work against us. And in my opinion, it has, just based on, you know, who he was and kind of where he came from, so to speak, just as the last gentleman was saying, bringing his celebrity, bringing that dynamic to the White House. And I just feel like that wasn't the place for that.
Okay. So Bill, same question to you. What kind of qualities do you want to see in a leader for this country? And who do you think best fits that?
Well, I try to judge candidates based on what you said, what I want out of a candidate. Mm-hmm. And you know, my philosophy is I believe in limited government, individual freedom, personal responsibility, free enterprise, and adherence to the Constitution. Now, having laid that out, neither candidate is a perfect fit. And but going to the limited government, I do feel like Democrats are a growing government, and a government has the answers for all things. And on Donald Trump's side, he's not a typical politician. I think that's one of the reasons he gets into so much trouble. He doesn't smooth talk. He doesn't color what he thinks and what he says. Some people find it refreshing. Other people find it appalling. But anyway, based on my preferences in what I'd like to see out of government, I certainly think Donald Trump is a better fit for that. Although I'd vote for Mike Pence in a heartbeat.
Mm. Well, so I want to remind the three of you and everyone who's also joined us for the past 10 weeks, it's not easy to get on a national radio show and talk about things as delicate as politics. So I am so grateful to all three of you. And I just wanted to remind you that, like, this is a table where we're all going to have an equal say. So don't feel like you got to hold back. Brandon, so now it's your turn. Do you know what kind of leader you want in the White House for the next 4 years?
Well, the kind of leader I would like to see, you know, would reflect compassion, empathy, and attempt to adequately address the international pandemic that we've been hit so hard by. And a president that is not a scripted president, that you can maybe sense that they speak from the heart and that they genuinely care about the populace that they have been elected to serve. And like our friend said, there's not a perfect, there'll never be a perfect candidate. But I fundamentally believe that Donald Trump has devalued the meaning of the executive office of the United States. And I respect the other views, but that's what keeps me up at night, is that we have compromised a lot of international relationships, and we are not conducting ourselves in the respectable manner that we have in the past. Mm.
So does that mean, Brandon, that you do know who you're going to vote for? Have you cast your ballot already?
I reserve the sacred right to go in on election.
Brandon,
I think there's a real...
No, go ahead.
No, I feel like the whole partisanship game that we're playing right now is encouraging us to prematurely select our elected officials. And I like to weigh all the possible pros and cons before I make that decision.
Okay. Do you know what's... Something cosmically strange happened right when you were talking about reserving the right. I think you were going to say to not talk about who you're going to cast your ballot for. We lost your line there for a second or two. So something stepped in to help protect your vote there, Brandon. But so let me step back. Let me step out of this. I don't want to be the referee between the three of you anymore. I just would love to hear. You guys have presented really important sets of values here for the kind of country that you want. And I just love to hear you sort of respond to each other, talk with each other about what you think about these values and how you think, or the person that you think is best to lead the country with those values. And Von Gretchen, I'll just let you start. What do you think about, what Bill said about small government, perhaps, for example?
I'm certainly open to that as well. I mean, I definitely agree. Sometimes government is, too into certain things. I also agree that we don't have the perfect candidate. I think it has to be more of a balance. But then also having a candidate, no matter whether they're Republican, Democrat, Independent, whomever, that is for the people as a collective, not just one side or the other, one view or the other. And I know it's challenging, being in the United States with over 300 some million people, that we all would agree on everything, but I know we have some basic fundamentals that we do agree on. We have more similarities, I think, than are expressed in our current leadership. So I agree. Like we can find a better balance with government interaction.
Yeah. Bill and Brandon, go ahead, jump in.
Donald Trump's never going to be a touchy-feely candidate. He's going to turn some people off by his personality and the way he goes about doing things. But I look at the promises he made in the beginning. I was incredibly doubtful, but I think probably, and I'm fairly old. I think Donald Trump has probably kept more of his promises, campaign promises, than any president that I can remember in my lifetime. And I remember Kennedy.
Which ones in particular do you think he's kept over the 4 years?
Well, prior to COVID, he dramatically improved the economy. Former President Obama said that, the new normal was about a 1%, 1.5% economic growth. And, we've been at the peak of the economic rebound. We were darn close to 4% GDP. So I think that was tremendous. The tax break. I mean, it was beneficial to me. I think it was beneficial to most middle income Americans. Certainly, it was beneficial to higher end earners. But I think a lot of the money went back into the economy, investments into business and that sort of thing. And I do think some jobs have started to come back because of the new tax code. You know, he's done all kinds of things, right to try, criminal justice reform, just veteran services. He has accomplished a lot of things that he said he would do.
Yeah. So, Brandon, again, I don't want to interfere with the three of you talking with each other, but let me just what Bill said brought a question to mind, particularly for you, Brandon, because I thought I heard you say earlier that you were that you believe that Donald Trump had debased the office of the presidency, if I heard you correctly. And if so, Bill just listed some of the accomplishments he sees under the Trump administration. Do they balance each other out at all for you or no?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to discount some of the definite optimistic points that, you know, I agree with some of the things Donald Trump has done, particularly, you know, being stronger with China. I think, yes, we've been taken advantage of for years in that regard. I think he is a businessman. He's very business-minded. I think he understands that portion of that, but that's a small component of the presidency. You are also a mirror to your population. You know, the way you act, the way you conduct your daily life, your rhetoric, the way you engage with others, demeaning reporters on live television, all of that sends a message back to the everyday American. And I'm unsettled by that portion of his conduct. I'm not going to discount some of the things he's done. And I think he has been his way of dealing with a virus, you know, has been scrutinized, but no one can adequately say that they would have handled it any better. So I'm not going to say that he's a, you know, an awful president. There's an international pandemic going on, and he probably has handled it as good as anyone could have. But as a voter, in my mind, it's more about his demeanor, his ethics, his way of life that turned me away from, you know, casting my vote in that regard.
Yeah,
can I jump in?
Yeah, go ahead, Bill.
I agree with everything that Brandon said, except the part about the press. And I think if, Lord knows I'd never be president, but I think if I were treated the way Donald Trump has been treated by the press, I'd be a heck of a lot uglier than he's been.
Why? I mean, because the press's job is to scrutinize people in power.
So, agreed. But the press's job is not to carry on to cover for what's going on. The impeachment I thought was ridiculous, but the special prosecutor. All of the elements surrounding that were absolutely ridiculous. There's all kinds of documentation now that it was contrived. The Mueller and Weissman and that crowd knew early on into the investigation that the dossier was false and or at least unverified. And now notes have come out that John Brennan briefed President Obama before Trump took office. All of this is documented now and not a peep. In fact, I think the press is doubling down because they're so guilty of covering this up. They hope that Biden is elected so that none of this will ever come to light.
Bill Bajaz, we've got to take a quick break here in a second, but you just talked about those stories or headlines. Where'd you get them from if you thought they were covered up?
You're not going to find it on the internet search, that's for sure. You're not going to hear it in mainstream media. You got to dig. I'd say the best documentation to get started is Witch Hunt by Jared.
Okay.
Greg Jared.
All right. So hang on. We got to take a quick break here. We'll be right back. We're talking to North Carolinians on what they want in the White House for the next 4 years. This is On Point.
Every day in America, 60 million packages are delivered. But we don't always know what's inside.
He bent down to pick the package up. That's when the device detonated.
Danger is everywhere, and no one is safe in Austin, Texas, as law enforcement hunts a serial bomber for 19 days. From Sony Music Entertainment, Campside Media, and Pegalo Pictures, this is Witnessed. 19 Days. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts to binge all episodes or listen weekly wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Next week, we are going to talk about the Senate because several Senate seats are up for grabs in this election. So we'll be looking at those competitive races and what it tells us about politics in this country. So, for example, if you live in South Carolina, Iowa, or Georgia, we want to hear from you. Who are you voting for in your Senate races there? Are you straight down the line for your ticket? Are you splitting parties? How do you feel about those down ballot races and their significance? Call us at 617-353-0683. That's 617-353-0683. That's for next week when we'll be talking about Senate races. Today, it's our final voter roundtable. We've been doing them for the past 2.5 months, listening to Americans talk about the issues that matter to them in this election. And I'm joined today by Brandon Beavers. He's with us from Robbinsville, North Carolina. Bill Poole joins us. He's with us from New Bern, North Carolina. And Von Gretchen Pugh joins us as well from Raleigh, North Carolina. So obviously, we're talking to North Carolinians today. Von Gretchen, I wanted to get you back in here for a quick second, just to respond to what you heard Bill and Brandon say about sort of their views of President Trump, really, is where we ended the conversation in the last segment. Just your thoughts.
Sure. I actually had questions for both Bill and Brandon. I think our conversation is going really well. For Bill, I know he pointed out things that he thought the president had done well. In your opinion, Bill, are there things that maybe he could have done or should have done differently?
Well, certainly. And to your point and Brandon's point, you know, the approach to everything, and I just think decorum and being presidential is unfortunately is just not in the repertoire. And, you know, and that disappoints me. Some tweets disappoint me. But the accomplishments, unfortunately, more than outweigh. My comment about Pence earlier was that, you know, he is the he does have that decorum and gravitas. But he's also a consummate politician. And I think one of the reasons that Trump gets so much done is he doesn't care about what it takes to get it done. He just wants to get things done.
Von Gretchen, did you want to ask a question to Brandon? Von Gretchen, are you there? Okay, we're going to try to get her back here in just a second. You know, we usually try to wrap up these conversations, and I've been doing it the same way for all of these roundtables, and asking everyone what their hopes and dreams are for this country in the next 4 years. And Brandon, I'm wondering if I could just turn that question to you. What do you think?
I guess my hopes and dreams for the next 20 years would be, you know, for Washington to really step into the middle of the aisle without fear of pushback from your party. You know, I would like to see at all levels of Washington people working together constructively instead of playing these games that all of us are seeing. It's not an effective Washington. It's not a productive Washington. And we're going to continue to see, I think, a negative trajectory if all members of our, you know, political representation aren't trying to find some common ground. Mm-hmm. I would just like to see more in the form of that.
Yeah. Von Gretchen, do we have you back? Looks like we're having real trouble with her line. Okay, we're going to try to get her back one last time. Bill, your hopes and dreams for the next...
I could not agree more with Brandon. Well said, and I agree. And I think, unfortunately, I believe Washington is so far gone in terms of polarization that it's up to us. It's up to the American people to get rid of the players that are there purely for power and politics and find representatives that are there to serve the American people. That's easier said than, easier said than done, but it's up to us. So Washington's not going to fix itself. We're a democratic republic, and it's up to us to police our government, and we've got to start doing it.
Yeah. So, Von Gretchen, is third time a charm? Do we have you back now?
Yes, I am. I was speaking, but I don't know what happened.
So very sorry. No. I mean, technical difficulties are a part of our reality this year. I'm going to give you the last word today. I was asking both Bill and Brandon what their hopes and dreams are for this country, for your country, for the next 4 years. And what would be your response to that, Von Gretchen?
I actually agree with both of them. I think that we have to have, we have to take control as the American people. We have to certainly not allow fear to govern us, not allow what we're shown, because a lot of times I think coming from radio, but more so like TV, social media, et cetera, people are able to push whatever their agenda is. I think that we have to think about the commonality between all of us as Americans, Americans being that you were born here, that you came from somewhere else. I think if you're living in America, you're an American that's bringing value to our country. And it's up to us to continue to find that commonality so we can meet in the middle of the aisle and do what's best for us as a country so we can move forward and not be stuck one way or the other.
Yeah. Well, with that, I'm going to wrap up our North Carolina roundtable today. Von Gretchen Pugh with us from Raleigh. Thank you so much for being with us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
And Bill Poole with us from New Bern, North Carolina. Bill, thank you so much.
Well, Meghna, thanks for having me, and thanks to Von Gretchen and Brandon. You sound like wonderful folks. I wish we could get together and talk more.
Socially distant, but I'm sure you could if you wanted. And Brandon Beavers from Robbinsville, North Carolina, thank you as well for being with us.
Thank you. It was an honor to participate, and I hope all of you stay safe.
Well, you know, as I mentioned at the top of the show, this is our 10th consecutive voter roundtable we've had over the past 2.5 months. And I wanted to spend the rest of the hour talking with my friend and colleague Jack Beatty, On Point News analyst, about what we've learned in more 10 hours of conversations with voters over the past couple months. So hello there, Jack.
Hello, Meghna.
I want to get us started, Jack, by hearing from a listener who called us about these voter roundtables. This is Brian Boltzmann from Jackson, Wyoming.
I just wanted to say I so appreciated hearing positive discourse and productive dialogue between American citizens. I think one thing that I've gotten from these roundtables is that there is a desire from all sides for higher-minded discourse.
So what do you think about, Jack? Is that one of your takeaways from these 10 hours of conversations we've had?
It is, and congratulations are in order to you and to our producers for this series, because that was your objective, after all, to get some civil discourse. This was your idea to have panels of voters just talking to you, talking to each other, talking to the nation. Our executive producer, Graham Griffith, made the point we needed to humanize, particularize, and individualize these people so that they wouldn't simply be taped as Democrats and Republicans. Thus, we found out where they live, what their backgrounds were. We went into their lives. And finally, Martin Kessler, our producer, did a brilliant job interviewing these people, preparing them, finding them, packaging this, beyond praise, what he did.
Yeah. Well, you know, Jack, you humble me with your compliments, but I'm not going to take any credit for doing what we should be doing more in the media. So tell me, what did you learn from the discourse that you heard?
Well, just to be very particular, I learned some reasons Trump voters were for him. An ex-Marine was for him because no new wars under Trump. Another man was for him because he would slow the march to socialism. Several were for him because he was a businessman and had business sense, even though we know he wasn't really a very successful businessman. Others that he was a strong leader, and one young man because he wanted the president was sponsoring the 1776 project to strengthen civic education. As for Joe Biden, people were for him because he had empathy, he trusted science, he had character. He'll triple funding for education, and my favorite, Joe will make politics boring again. And there was one striking common ground between two voters. A Massachusetts man said he'd crawl over broken glass to reelect Trump because Trump was pro-life. A Pennsylvania woman said she'd crawl over broken glass to elect Biden because we needed a better model for our children.
Mm. Well, there are a couple specific listeners that I know you wanted to discuss in a little more detail. For example, when we did our roundtable with Florida voters, we talked to Stephen Starch, who lives in the Villages, that giant retirement community in Central Florida, lifelong Republican who supported Donald Trump in 2016, but he began questioning his decision even before the president took office.
Even in the lame duck period, where he wasn't even reading the presidential briefings, I'm saying, you have no experience at all with this. You can't get your advice from Fox and Friends and Sean Hannity. I would hope you'd listen to these experts and make decisions accordingly. So the warning signs were there very early on, and it wasn't long after his inauguration when things started going downhill and I realized, gee, Stephen, you made a horrible mistake in who you voted for.
So, Jack, what was it about Stephen that really caught your attention?
Well, first of all, it's hard to say you made a mistake, right? It's to own up to say I was wrong. I voted for the wrong person in 2016, and I'm insofar responsible for his being there. So I don't know that that's a unique perspective by any means. I tried to find data. There isn't any. There does seem to be a fair amount, a sprinkling of voters' remorse, buyer's remorse among Trump supporters. And I think that gentleman gave a very cogent summary of how he had come to that right from the start, even before the presidency began.
Mm. So there's a lesson that I really drew out of these many hours of conversation, and that is where people get their information is a very powerful force, has been historically, but more now than ever. So, for example, when we did a Wisconsin roundtable, we talked to Alexis Arnold from Green Bay, and here's what she told us.
You know, when I have time to check in, whether it's picking up news that's coming in on my phone or stuff that's online, I'm not seeing, like you said, you know, talks about education or talks about, you know, how we're going to help small business or healthcare, whatever those big ticket items are. It's like, oh, so-and-so said this, so-and-so said that. And it's just like this kind of bickering back and forth.
Uh-huh. So that's Alexis in our Wisconsin roundtable. And the reason why I wanted to bring that up, Jack, is because she's a single mom. She owns a business. She's trying her hardest to get by. She relies on those push notifications coming through her phone. And we heard other people when we asked them where they got their information from, there were those alternate realities, those very different universes of information. And I just thought, oh, the toxicity in the information ecosystem in this country right now is a factor that we need to, it is corroding our democracy. There's no doubt about it. And I kept hearing that over and over and over again as we were talking to these voters.
Yes. Senator Moynihan said people are entitled to their opinions, but we're not entitled to our – to each person isn't entitled to facts. But that's not true anymore. Everybody has separate, dossiers of fact. And that – you're quite right. That is a standing danger to democracy, since we can't even agree on the common reality that faces all Americans.
Yeah. You know, this is so important that I in order to keep up with you, Jack, I actually dipped into history myself this morning, and I found a letter that Thomas Jefferson wrote to Richard Price in 1789. Price is being a Welsh preacher and political philosopher, and he was writing to Price about how Jefferson was surprised that 11 of the 13 colonies were able to actually agree to the then nascent Constitution of the United States of America, and in this letter, January 8, 1789, Jefferson said it's consolatory proof that wherever the people are well informed, they can be trusted with their own government, that whenever things get so far wrong as to attract their notice, they may be relied on to set them to rights. So I am hoping that well-informed part we in the media take as seriously as possible. Now, there's one more thing that I did want to float by you, Jack, and that is we closed every hour with a question to people about their hopes and dreams for this country, and it was remarkable what people said. So here's a selection.
I hope that we have healing and unity.
My hope is that we can see each other as humans.
I just hope we all come together and just realize that as a people, what's really most important in our life. And I think it's our family and the people around us.
More comfort and more peace and more equality for everyone in this country.
Better life for all Americans.
Try to bring our country together again.
I want our America to be just as we say it is, one nation, united.
Jack, those are listeners who were both supporters of Biden, supporters of Trump, people who hadn't yet decided. The goals for Americans are very much the same. They talk about unity, but I didn't actually hear a sense of, and we can compromise to get there, that we can find what that common ground is. So unity just, it has a meaning in America, which I don't know if it's a realistic one anymore. I mean, we've just got a minute left, Jack. What do you think?
Well, it's harder, isn't it? Mm-hmm. I mean, and partly because of the siloing of information that you spoke about, these different universes we seem to inhabit. But at least on this program, for these 10 hours, we showed voters respecting one another, listening to one another. They modeled tolerance. Ortega y Gasset, the Spanish philosopher, said tolerance is the acrobatic willingness to share existence with the other. We showed that. They modeled it, and it's something to keep in our minds in coming days.
Jack Beatty, On Point News Analyst. Jack, thank you so very much, as always.
Thank you.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.